everyone, and welcome to the Blue Jays Center podcast presented by the Sick Podcast Network. What a game yesterday. Getting the season starting off right. Another opening day win. Let's talk some Blue Jays baseball.
Turn up your volume. Because you're about to listen to the Sick Podcast. Blue Jays Center.
Bautista drives it deep.
The sickest Toronto Blue Jays podcast. It's gonna be sick.
Cole Whiston here, and I'm with my guys, Rob Pentalamon in the middle, and on the right, James Price. We are from Blue Jays Center, the Instagram page. And for anyone that is joining us on this podcast and you haven't heard of the Instagram page, you probably should check it out. No humble brag, but we are the largest Blue Jays fan page on Instagram. 68,000 followers and counting, and we get you updates daily. We do post game shows after every game, or at least we try to, and we post the highlights from the game and everything. So if you're not coming from Blue Jays Center on Instagram, by all means check it out, and we welcome you to the show. Thanks for joining.
All right, boys.
How you doing, Cole? Man, I'm actually psyched for this, man. Like yesterday, opening day, I mentioned our post game show yesterday. This team just has a knack. Getting us all hyped. Everyone, no matter what team you're a fan of, everyone's hyped for opening day. We love it. It's a baseball fan's tradition. But this Blue Jays team specifically, as much as we want to talk about how this core hasn't always lived up to their expectations in the past, on opening day, completely different story. They're the best team I've ever seen on opening days.
Well, it's hilarious, right, guys? Like the way the game started. Three down, first inning for the Jays. Leadoff bomb from Yandy Diaz, and we're sitting here like, oh boy, okay,
here we go.
This is not how this is.
Not to mention they go like nine up, nine down, like hitting. Yeah. It's like, oh, here we go again. Like,
yeah, and we've started the last three opening days, I think, down.
Yeah,
right.
I believe they were trailing. Yeah, especially last year. Like, I think last year was just a complete roller coaster up and down. This one, a little more neat and tidy. Jose Berríos shoved Vlad with a big bomb. I'm sure we'll talk all about that today. But I'll tell you what, boys. One of 162, I get it. You don't want to go too far, especially considering this team's history. They always have good opening days, but I'm psyched. Good start for the 2024 club.
There's also nothing like beating the Rays at the Trabe, boys. There's nothing.
Oh, my God. I said,
yes.
I was thinking throughout the entire day yesterday because, as you guys are aware, I've been pessimistic about this offseason, and I was like, I'm going to get back in at some point. And I was thinking about, I was like, what is it going to take for me to get back into this season? And I realized that a 450-foot bomb from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and a win in Tropicana Field on opening day is all it actually took for me to get back into this team.
Which, by the way, 450 feet, I don't care what Sadcast says, that ball, no, that I want to get a recount on that measurement. I've watched a million games in that ballpark begrudgingly over the last decade plus. I've never seen a ball go that far in my life. And to do it for Vlad, we mentioned all offseason how big he must be for this team in order to reach their potential. Great start for Vlad. That was the only hit he had in the whole game. But even his other at-bats just scorched a ton of balls, multiple 100-plus mile-per-hour balls off the bat. Just a great start for the whole club. Bo did his thing. Springer Dinger hit that home run there. Berríos was great. Bullpen was neat and tight. He could not have asked for a better script.
No doubt.
Yeah,
people go, like, he went 1-for-5, and people are like, oh, he only had one hit. I'm like, do I give a crap? Like, no! You hit a moonshot off the race running pitcher. You know, I'll take that any day of the week. And also, fellas, we can't go any further without talking about two back-to-back hits with runners in scoring position. And two.
Oh, yeah. How did I get lost in the script? You know, I said first extra base hit, or sorry, not extra base hit. First runners in scoring position hit with two outs since 2022. This was the exact spot that this team, just for whatever reason, shot themselves in the foot repeatedly last year. Every time the situation came up, it's so good to get the monkey off the back in the first game of the season. Man, it is incredible. A breath of fresh air. I haven't seen it in a while.
Well, I mean, we saw the quote came up before the game yesterday from John Schneider. The goal this year is we need to do damage. Yep. And last year, obviously, it seemed like the philosophy from what we were being told was hit it to all parts of the field, and we had our worst offensive season in this core with the Blue Jays.
Yep.
I'm glad that at minimum, even if it sounds so simple, oh, we just need to do damage. It's like, yeah, okay, thanks, Tips. But if that was an actual approach in this offseason spring training, then I am actually very happy that you know, we ended up with however many hits we had yesterday, but three of them were home runs. Like, three solo bombs, I'm completely fine with. Like, that's how you win games. Like, we can win games if you hit solo bombs. Like, you can't win games if you hit 15 hits, but only one of them came with runners in scoring position.
And what was so great, and Rob mentioned it earlier, how, you know, nine up, nine down to start the game. And right away, George, the next guy up, goes deep, and the entire rest of the game against Zach Eflin, they flipped, whether they saw how they were pitching him and they changed their approach and they went up there with a plan. Like, how many times last year do we talk about what's the plan? Like, right. You go up there with nothing in your mind and you just look awful out there. And yesterday, I know it's game one, so you don't want to dwell on it too much, but boy, they had a plan that second time around and they made him pay.
And that's the thing about Zach Eflin, too. He had a good season with the Rays last year, but this is generally a guy who's going to give you stuff to hit. I was listening to the fan pregame show talking about Zach Eflin. Yeah, good numbers all across the board. Any guy who steps foot with the Rays is going to be a good pitcher regardless. Even though they have half their team on the IL, they're basically running out a triple-A rotation. You looks on the surface. You know they're going to be competitive. They're the Rays. You can never bury them. They're a zombie that keeps on rising. But Zach Eflin's going to give you stuff to hit. And like you mentioned, James, that first time through the order really was a feeling out process. They hit his mistake second time around. They chased him out of that game. It looked like he was on for a gem. He ended up leaving, I think, giving up six earned runs in less than six innings. So, yeah, just a really, really nice start to see them go up with a plan and actually execute it.
I said on the show yesterday that, you know, and you disagreed with me at the time, that in my opinion, despite Zach Eflin's stats from last year, he just seems to me like a subpar pitcher. He might have years like he did last year, but if you look through the rest of his baseball reference, he'll also have years where he is a subpar pitcher, and it's because of the stuff. And I think that this Jays team missed out on that opportunity last year, beating up on guys like this. Yeah. We could compete. We would compete with the guys with the aces, and then every once in a while, obviously, we'd get shoved, but that's just what happens when you face an ace. But we couldn't beat up on the bad pitching. We made every subpar pitcher last year look like an ace. And to see on game one, we beat up on in my opinion, a subpar pitcher despite the year he had last year, I thought that was huge.
Definitely.
Oh, you're right. 100%. And they'll have a lot of guys to face on this series. Like I mentioned, the Rays. You go through it. Shane Boz, Drew Rasmussen, Shane McClanahan. Obviously, they traded Tyler Glasnow in the offseason. So we're basically going to see the back end slash front end of their AAA rotation go against us this weekend. I know the Blue Jays, they have some injuries. We'll talk about that all on the show. Obviously, Kevin Gausman, he will make the start, thankfully, later this series or maybe early in the next series. It'll be abbreviated, but still an opportunity to get some wins early against the Rays. The Blue Jays, their key to success this season is going to be what they couldn't do last year, and that's beat up on the AL East. They had 10 games under 500 against the AL East last year. Well, as we all know, very competitive division. The Jays are going to make any damage, and by damage, I mean even get to the postseason. Got to be much better, and they got to jump on teams when they're vulnerable. And right out of the gates, good opportunity here for the Jays, and so far, so good.
Yeah, I'm going to preview the rest of the show for everybody listening now. So we got a lot coming up because it's the first show of the season. Obviously, we do want to get into some off-season talk to give you guys our thoughts on how this Jays offseason went. I've already alluded to my thoughts on it. But then we're obviously going to get into the future of this team. Who's going to be the best player this year? Who's going to be the best pitcher this year? Who might have a bounce back from last year? Who might have some regression from last year? We'll talk about the injuries. We'll talk about the series coming up. And for all the hardcore audience, we will also do some advanced analysis. Rob and I came together with some stuff for those that enjoy that stuff, because as you've probably seen on Blue Jays Center, we enjoy that stuff, but we know we're speaking to a wider casual audience. So we just a short section at the end of the show. And we start this show with a question that, you know, piggybacks off of yesterday, but I think is going to be huge in this team's success this year. Can Jose Berríos be an ace level starter next to Kevin Gausman this year? And Rob, I'll start with you.
I've always been a big Jose Berríos guy. Back in 2021, if anyone is still OG listening to those shows back then, I appreciate you. You make the page what it is. I was banging down the door for them to sign or to trade for Jose Berríos. I thought that he was going to be kind of their David Price-esque acquisition that we saw back in 2015. And for the most part, he really was. That they got him. He was really solid down the stretch, had an outstanding month of September. Unfortunately, the whole team wasn't enough to get them over the finish line and make the playoffs. So we don't have to go into all that. Obviously, we know the 2022 season, how much of a struggle it was. Last year kind of normalized back to normal. And I think that's who Jose Berríos is going to be at the worst. You know, he's going to be a guy who he's going to go out there. His value proposition was he's going to make every start. He's never going to go on the IL. He's going to give you a ton of innings, and he'll give them at a quality rate of 115 to 120 OPS, sorry, ERA plus. That's the kind of guy you can expect, which is a really good high-end starter. But your question is, Professor, can he take the next step? Can he be that Cy Young candidate? And I know he finished top 10 Cy Young a couple times, I believe. But can he be that formidable second, that 1B to Kevin Gausman, what he's been the last couple of years? And my answer is, why not? You look at the actual numbers that he has, the peripherals, it's all good. It's all he profiles as a really good pitcher. I think to me, a big factor in why he hasn't necessarily been able to go into that Cy Young conversation and why he's kind of just been in the above average, really good starter conversation is because non-baseball elements. We've seen this guy in the past. The pressure kind of eat at him a bit. You know, ever since the situation doesn't go to plan, he kind of lets the walls kind of close in on him a bit. And we saw that the last time, ironically, on opening day. That's kind of why we were so worried about him in the postseason game last year until he actually shoved, and that turned into a whole storyline of its own, which we don't have to relitigate again. But I thought yesterday, really good example. The obviously, look at the stat line, was terrific. Six innings, two earned runs, six strikeouts. The whip was good. The stuff looked phenomenal. Really bounced back. But to me, that sixth inning where it looked like, okay, here we go. The Rays are raising again, as they always do at Tropicana Field. The Blue Jays have a lead. And now all of a sudden, every little bounce starts going their way, and they're going to get back into this game. That's what it looked like until Jose Berríos locked in. Down 3-1 to Randy Arozarena, got him to fly out. And then a couple nice plays on the infield, one by IKF at third, and then Bo Bichette fielding that was it Paredes? It was Paredes, right? Who hit that,
that short.
And then, Then Bo cleaned it up. Just huge to see Jose Berríos kind of very much limit the damage. The first five innings were terrific. He had his stuff. The Rays basically had no shot other than that Yandy Diaz bloop that you mentioned that went over the fence. That was a good pitch. But that sixth inning to me was huge, because I think if Jose Berríos can lock that down, can eliminate these non-baseball elements and just stick to the script, stick to being who he is, I don't see why he can't be a 1B to Kevin Gausman and be in that Cy Young slash ace conversation.
Now, I hate to be on the agreeing front, because it's always fun to go against you, Rob, but I got to agree with you, man. Seeing what we've seen, like, last season especially, I think that last year he had career numbers. Like, you look at his career, and, you know, he's been a career, what, 3.5 ERA type of guy. And last year was outstanding. And you mentioned, especially in 2022, like, we all know the numbers overall were horrific. Like, they were ugly numbers. But as you mentioned, the caving in and in tough situations, like, he can go four great innings, then get a couple of base runners get on the fifth, and it falls apart. And that year in 2022, a lot of his really bad outings were because of that one horrific inning that he couldn't get out of. And you mentioned that yesterday was a prime example of why he can figure this out and be the 1B to Kevin Gausman. I mean, if you watch the game really in depth, and Cole and I were talking about it before, that nasty two-seamer that he threw to Palacios made him twist out of the way, and the thing came back over the strike zone. Like, the thing was nasty looking. And you get guys moving like that with a fastball, it changes everything else. You can throw your changeup for strikes, and they'll have to respect your fastball. And his slider, curveball, slurve, whatever you want to call it, has such great movement that if you're locating your fastball the way he can do it, boy, it was great, boys. I truly believe that he can be that 1B, and he's been that basically his entire career, other than the one outlier season. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think he can be that 1B to Kevin Gausman.
Fact checking, Rob, as I will do a lot throughout the show. He finished his highest Cy Young finish was ninth in 2021 when we made the trade for him. That's his only time finishing in the top 10 in Cy Young voting. So if he can get back to that level, then I think obviously the answer to this question will be yes, he can be a 1B. The other big note that I wanted to talk about from opening day before we move on to our offseason thoughts, Vlad is hitting in front of Bo this year, and it isn't by accident. It was a thing that the Jays wanted to put out there and make public, like, no, we are choosing to do this, at least for the time being. I lean in the camp, and most people who have listened to Blue Jay Center last year knew where I stood on this. Your best hitter needs to be hitting third.
Yep.
Last year, Bo Bichette was our best hitter, and they didn't make that move to him hitting third. And I was so mad about it because it was like, why aren't you even trying it? This year, I'm glad that we are going into the season with our best hitter hitting third, but I do want to say this. If the roles reverse and Vlad gets back to form, despite you maybe thinking that, oh, well, it's success because you have Bo hit behind him, I think that they should move Vlad back to third if Vlad gets back to form.
Yeah.
What do you think, Bryson?
I honestly, I just love seeing Bo in the three hole. Yeah, we love Vlad. When you think of Vlad, you think of power, right? And that's fine. But you also don't know what you're going to get from Vladdy this year. Like, there's expectations, right? Sure.
No, you don't.
And the over-under, I'm not going to get into that stuff yet because we have that later on. But, you know, a lot of the over-unders that you see on sportsbooks and whatnot, you know, all the numbers that are on there, he's hit the over once.
Right.
And it's like, and it was the MVP-type season. We've seen before that and after that, he hasn't done it. So it's like, well, what are you going to get from Vladdy this year? Look, like, 450 dead center, we'll take that damn thing any day of the week. Sure. But the reason I like it, and again, it's all on paper stuff. You have Bo hitting in front of Justin Turner, who, if you look at all his numbers over his career, is one of the most clutch hitters you can get. Even last year's numbers in Boston in age 38 season, his numbers, you know, with nobody on base, where they were fine, they were good. You put a guy at first, you put a guy at second, you load the bases, you do whatever, his numbers skyrocket. And who's a guy? Yeah, Bo's not going to hit a million home runs, no. But he's going to get on base a ton. He's going to extra base. He's going to rip a bunch of doubles. He's going to have lots of extra base hits and be in scoring position for a guy like Justin Turner. So I think at least to start the season and all the on paper stuff, I think that's a perfect spot for Bo. Now, if Vladdy goes out there and he cranks a solo shot, it is what it is. But, you know, I don't want Bo Bichette hitting a single and a ground ball double play from Vladdy. It's, again, flashbacks from last year. But no, I love the thought, at least to start the season, to have Bo hitting third.
What I will say, and I agree with you guys that this should be, I like the lineup. I think they got it right. Kind of for the different reasons. I know, Cole, you mentioned you have the school of thought that you want your power hitter to be hitting third. You want your run producer to be hitting there. I'm actually a bit of a different school of thought. I'm on the, you want your higher on base guys hitting higher in the order so they can get on base for the middle of the order. And to me, even with Vlad, even last season, you can do, obviously, last season was really no debate, but all along, Vlad versus Bo, one of the different attributes, no matter what, is that Vlad will get on base. Vlad will take his walks. Vlad will take his pitches. Yeah, we've seen him chase in the past, but relative to Bo, Vlad's going to get on base. You know, Vlad's going to set the table, and then obviously you have Bo, the free swinger, putting guys on base. I think that's kind of the optimal approach for Bo. You want him to have guys on. You want him to have the defense shifting when he puts a ball in play and have the runners moving around. I think, to me, I agree, but for that reason, because I think you want Vlad to get walks and you want Bo to cash him in.
Also, sorry, Cole, jump in there. I think it simplifies his Vladdy approach. Yeah. He doesn't have to go up there and think he has to hit a ball 450 feet. Right. Like, you got guys behind you, like I mentioned, the whole Turner stuff, but then you have Bo behind you. You get on base for a single, or health, like Rob said, a walk. And you have one of the best hitters in baseball hitting behind you who's going to rip a double. And who knows, you come around to score, great. If not, you got one of the best guys with hitting runners in scoring position up after that. So, yeah, I think there's multiple different ways to look at it. And I think it's a great thing, like I said, to start the season with.
And I mean, for those who go back and forth on the whole concept of lineup protection, just a quick debrief, lineup protection, basically in saying that if you have better guys hitting in front of you or better guys hitting behind you, the pitcher will be forced to challenge you as opposed to nibbling around the corners. With Vlad getting on base, and I know that this is a kind of a concept that baseball purists go back and forth on whether it's real or not, but Vlad getting on base ahead of Bo, all of a sudden now as a pitcher, you can't really pitch around Bo. You can't really force him to get himself out. And I know Bo is a free swinger. He'll swing. But if he's going to force the ball into the zone, Bo's got that elite plate coverage. That's always been his highest attribute as a hitter. He can get to any ball, even the bad ones. Yep. Shrinking the zone, the attack zone where pitchers can attack him, that'll really maximize Bo's chances of getting bat to ball. And obviously we know when Bo gets bat to ball, good things happen for this club. Oh, yeah. We saw it yesterday. And I think to me, that's kind of the main thing. I think it maximizes both guys' strength. I know it's, like you mentioned, like Cole's point at the beginning of the topic, that it's not the conventional build of big league lineup, but I think it's really maximizing the strength of these two players, which to me, I think that's what you got to do. You got to build the game plan around your strengths. And that's why I'm a big fan of it personally.
Yeah.
for the first time in what felt like a long time for John Schneider, him getting a lineup right is one of those things. And that part of the lineup involved a very questionable, where were we going to put Justin Turner? Yesterday it was fourth, and I think I agreed with that, at least for the time being. And that segues perfectly to our off-season talk. And we'll start with Justin Turner. I have held the opinion that you don't bank on a guy that's 39 years old going to turn 40 in the season. You just don't. I'm sorry. I get it. For his literal almost entire career, he has been consistent at the plate. But I've always said, in a contending year, relying on flyers just doesn't seem to be, or at least for me, it's not my enjoyment. I don't like it at all. But in terms of this offseason and the free agent market that was available, Justin Turner could be argued for being one of the better options offensively, something or even more reliable options offensively, assuming that Father Time doesn't just catch up to him and he falls off a cliff this year. So that's where I sit with the Justin Turner signing. I know that a lot of people have been more optimistic about it, James.
Yeah, I've definitely been on the optimistic side of things. Why? Because I'm tired of being negative about the team, for one. And especially how the offseason was going up until the Turner signing. I'm like, look, can I just be positive about this for a second? Mm-hmm. We saw the Shohei nonsense. The airplane I'm not going to get into it. We might get into it. I don't know. But Juan Soto, obviously that whole deal with the Yankees. And we're like, boy, this is a disastrous offseason. Everyone's thinking about bringing back Chapman. Obviously that didn't happen. And then you see the ticket these guys are going for. It's like, boy, okay. And you bring in, like you said, Cole, 39, 40-year-old Justin Turner. It's like, okay. But then I deep dive into his numbers, and I think to myself, what did the Jays lack last season? Well, we all know we talked about it right off the top, the hitting with runners in scoring position where you never felt comfortable. You really didn't. Two on, nobody out? That cool. Fine. I'm waiting for the ground ball double play and a strikeout. Like, that's what we're waiting on here. And it was crazy. I was in Colorado watching Jays and Rockies, and they had the bases loaded, two out. I think it was Lawrence, I believe. I can't remember his first name, was pitching for the Rockies. And, you know, they were down a run. And you're thinking, okay, bases loaded. You have a chance. Horwitz at the plate. I didn't give a damn because you knew what was going to happen. And he struck out, I think, on like three straight sliders that weren't even close. And you're like, yeah, this is the story of the season. They can't get it done. And you bring in a guy like Justin Turner. And look, again, like we've talked about already, on paper, sure, it's fine. But he is 39, getting on 40. Father Time is undefeated. So it's just a matter of time when that happens. Is that this season? Is that, you know, next season or whenever for Justin Turner? But seeing what he did last year, I understand at Fenway Park, he's a professional guy who's been around and done that. I mean, for the guys that were there, sure, you can argue JD Martinez, but I like Justin Turner. I think he's going to be good, again, if Father Time doesn't eat him up this season.
I'm very much, I think you guys will notice over the course of this podcast, I very much defer to the numbers. I'm very much an objective viewer of baseball. I'm a big baseball fan. I love the intrinsic value of baseball, but for the most part, I'm by the numbers. Whatever is down objectively is what I kind of go with. I think that's, yeah, go ahead.
For any of the fans out there who are, well, maybe the older fans, I don't know, who like despise the analytics and like the game of baseball, when Rob starts going off about DRS and stuff, yeah, plug your ears. Plug your ears because it's going to get hairy. So, Rob, yeah, keep going, bud.
Runners on first and second. Get the bunt down. Move the runner over. Get the ball.
They love that stuff. Oh, yeah.
Anyways, basically, my whole point about where I was going there is that as much as I am a big objective guy, I do believe, I don't think that it's all robotic. You know, I do think that analytics can capture the heartbeat of a guy with runners on second and third with one out, with bases loaded, sure, with the game on the line. And I think that a lot of people will say that runners in scoring position isn't a repeatable skill. There's a lot of randomness. And look, I think that there is validity to that. But at the end of the day, when you have a guy like Justin Turner, who's put a career of coming up huge in big spots, that's kind of what this team's been needing all season long. And look, obviously, I'll be dead on. Justin Turner wasn't my first choice of DH this offseason. But as Cole mentioned, you were kind of shopping in an aisle. And we'll talk about this as a macro problem with the offseason and the Blue Jays philosophy. They never seemed to be the perfect fit. And obviously, Ohtani was the perfect fit. But in terms of the guys that seemed realistic in the end, JD Martinez, Jorge Soler, Jock Peterson, probably all of them I could have talked into a better option than Turner. But none of them are perfect, I think, and obviously you hear about the off-field stuff, the leadership, the obviously veteran presence, the being a bunch of World Series caliber teams, and obviously winning that 2020 World Series with the Dodgers, playing in a bunch of World Series. I think all that stuff matters, that it doesn't capture it within a baseball savant page. So
yep.
like I said, Justin Turner, I'm kind of in the middle of both of you guys. I wasn't exactly over the top thrill compared to the other options, but I still think he can help his team. And I think a lot of them mentioned they compare him to Brandon Belt because obviously he's filling in the Brandon Belt role. He's going to be their full-time DH, it looks like, for the majority. Full-time majority, it's kind of a contradictory statement, but he's going to be the DH for the majority of the season. And yeah, will he have a Brandon Belt-like season where he has a 130 OPS plus? Probably not. That's not who Justin Turner is.
Well,
however, if you look at Brandon Belt's season last season, the numbers were good. He was awful with runners in scoring position. You look at the problems this team's struggling. He was at the brunt of it. He had the low. I know I'm not a batting average guy, but he had the lowest batting average with regards to the scoring position. A big part of that is because he hit middle of the order. So, you know, coincidentally, he'll have a lot of opportunities. But if Justin Turner can profile, even if he profiles as a worse offensive player, which I think he will, than Brandon Belt, he can make up for it by coming up in big spots that Brandon Belt simply just didn't last year.
Yeah, we hinted at advanced analytics, and I think that like Rob. They play a huge factor in this game. Justin Turner, for the argument of he played in Fenway last year, for anyone that is unaware about this, OPS plus accounts for that. Ballpark factored in. And he still had a 114 OPS plus, a well above average hitter, and that was in a hitter-friendly ballpark. So I see all the points for Justin Turner. And yeah, like I said, I hope Father Time doesn't catch up to him. The other offseason acquisition that people definitely had a strong opinion on was IKF, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, known for his defensive utility. In a year that we need offense, we got IKF, and I think that we got him at a price tag above where other defense-first utility guys, slightly better offensive guys, went below those price tags. But we also jumped the gun on IKF as well. I think we don't need to spend a whole lot of time on IKF. I think we're all in agreement. If he can be just that, solid defensively and bat at the bottom of the order and be not the worst offensive player in baseball, then, you know what? Who cares?
Well, sure. I mean, you can say that. And, like, Professor, you're making me try to be negative after that great opening day win. But at the same time, I can't – look, I don't think I mentioned this like publicly on Blue Jays Center, but I think I told you, I look at the IKF signing a lot like drafting a punter on day two of the NFL draft. You know, like, it's like you have your roster and you want to raise the ceiling of your team. But at the same time, worst case scenario, you don't sign IKF. You sign one of these guys who provide less value than him for a fraction of the price. It just seemed like instead of going all in on upside and taking a bigger risk, you try to raise the floor that early in the offseason. You jump the market, and obviously in hindsight you see all the other guys, the Ahmed Rosario, the Gio Urshela, is the basically the prototype Isaiah Kiner-Falefa comparisons, go for a lot cheaper. I think that you can't help but be a little bit pessimistic on the acquisition. I'm not saying IKF it can't be a good player. I think he will play a valuable role for this team, at least to start the season. I just feel like the process to the signing was just not the greatest. And I think that, like we mentioned, for a team that needed, that could have afforded a bit of a shortage on defense first, glove first guys playing every day, taking every day at bats, it's hard to be overly bullish. But look, I do think IKF, solid guy. Last season was a bit of an outlier. You look at the two seasons before that, a 3+ win player on Baseball Reference. If you can be that, obviously it'll be a big downgrade compared to Matt Chapman, but I think there is value to be had in this deal, regardless of me being a little bit pessimistic about it.
Rob, Jen, I know you're trying to find the positives, bud, but a career 659 OPS.
85 OPS plus, what is it?
Career? Oh yeah, last year wasn't like, hold on, I got it right here. Well, last year's OPS plus a 78, Rob.
God.
Sure.
Look at me. I was being real. Professor was trying to play it off like it's all good.
I was more like, who cares? Like, if he just needs to be average. He just needs to be elite. They're not elite, but he needs to be well above average defensively. Yeah. And just below average offensively for it to be like, okay, great,
you,
cool.
You know there's going to be IKF full-on defenders out there. They'll be like, oh, see that play yesterday for Jose Barrios? He didn't make that play? Holy crap. Everything changes. You know,
yeah, I will be honest, though. If you're going to be a glove-first guy who's signed, and sure, given the current situation, you got to kind of be able to make that play. I know it's Tropicana Field's got that new turf going, but I don't know. I feel like that they would have been out in front full for, like you mentioned, Pricey. That inning got out of hand. So thank God. Yeah. For Jose Barrios and Bo Bichette for bailing IKF out. That could have been ugly.
Yeah, it definitely could have been ugly. I think he bounced off his chest and he was able to corral it and get there first.
Credit to him. He bounced back. He got the out first, which was huge. But yeah, I feel like if you're that's your espoused value, your value proposition to that, you're going to be a great glove first guy, then yeah, got to make that play.
Fellas, that's enough.
Guy we had last year makes that play. I'll tell you that much.
All right, Rob, that's enough IKF talk. What's Cole? What's like, holy crap.
Yeah. I think the other big acquisition, and then the other guys will be quick in terms of guys that we didn't acquire or didn't resign. The other big acquisition was Yariel Rodriguez, obviously known for his production outside of North America. And I think that that was one of my bigger points is that, like, you know, for him, at least we didn't really. Not a lot went on the books, and so that's what I like about if you're going to sign somebody that you haven't seen compete at this level, then I get that, or the Jays at least didn't, you know, go all in. Like, they didn't do what Dodgers did with Yamamoto, which I hope blows up in their face because Snell was on the market, and we'll get into that. But Rodriguez, if he can just simply be one of our better bullpen arms, one of our more reliable bullpen arms, the bridge from the starter that can't go six innings to the bullpen who needs to get to 7, 8, 9. You know what? I'm okay with that, especially if it's just this year. If eventually he gets stretched out into a fifth starter role, I'm even cool with that. It's, you know, that all depends on Alec Manoah. So I think that the Rodriguez signing, despite my pessimistic point of view when it comes to guys that haven't competed in the biggest level, I think that we didn't go, not a lot of risk was there. And I like that.
I will say though, I'll piggyback off what you mentioned there. Yeah. Yariel Rodriguez, interesting guy. For those of you who are unfamiliar, most of you probably are, but just a quick recap. Yeah. Spent most of his time pitching in Japan last season, it was Cuba in the World Baseball Classic. Didn't pitch at all professionally in the 2023 season. You mentioned, Professor, $2 million he's being owed this season, starting the season in AAA, trying to build himself up to big league competition. I think this year is kind of, like you mentioned, kind of a gloves off year where he can kind of develop and turn into maybe a high leverage reliever at the end of the year. But he's going to be guaranteed, I think, what is it, $32 million and could go up to 47 something million over the course of this contract. So my point is that they're making quite a hefty investment for an unknown commodity, like you mentioned. And I think this year it'll be slow. The development will be maybe a little more stunted, but yeah, no, I think, and this kind of reminds me, the last podcast me and James did, Jay's Banter, we actually had a similar situation when they signed Shun Yamaguchi, Jay's COVID legend, Shun Yamaguchi. My point is that can't happen. You've made quite a bit of an investment. You need to get big league production, hopefully as soon as this season, positive big league production. And going on, he's $2 million this year, but after that, I mean, he's getting, I think, what, $5 to $8 million for the next few years of the contract. So, I think this is more of a down the road kind of investment. This season, maybe not so much, not right now at least. Hopefully by the end of the season, he can turn up to be something, whether that's a high leverage reliever. I think that's kind of the ceiling, or maybe, God forbid, if he's being asked to make big league starts. Because I think if that's the case, then some things would have had to go wrong with this club. So we'll see. I don't think it's all that consequential in 2024, though, if I'm being honest.
It's definitely not in 2024. And I'll tell you why. It's the only year he has options.
Yeah.
The 2024 is the only season that he can be sent up and down without having to, you know, clear through waivers or something like that. So they're really trying to figure out where he fits. Obviously, stretching him out, I think, is the plan. And you mentioned back end of the bullpen type of reliever. I don't want to dwell on a spring training start too much, but his last one against Baltimore, he went three innings, only had one strikeout. So it's like, okay, you know, again, I don't want to dwell on it too much, but you know, is it still him ramping up? It probably is. It's spring training. Who cares?
The year.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing, right? He hasn't pitched in the whole year. That's probably why the options are for this season, because you don't know what you're going to get. You don't know where he's going to pitch. I'm just interested to see what happens with him and where they put him, because giving him that sort of term, you got to have faith in him.
That was kind of my other point is like the Jays, especially this current front office in this season, clearly did not want to go after risk guys like Chapman, like Bellinger, like Snell. They wouldn't do it. But they did choose to go after Rodriguez. And in my opinion, that has to mean something. That has to mean something that somebody in that front office, in their scouting department, realized that we can make something of him. And getting $8 million a year, whatever it is, that's a guy that's just supposed to be a good reliever. Like, that's good reliever money. So it's like, if he comes to even make starts and be competent for five innings, then we are getting his contract worth. We are getting it. Or if he can just be a very good version of Trevor Richards, then you know what? That also looks to be something like we're getting his contract worth. If he is a good reliever, it's worth the contract.
Since you're going term, wouldn't be opposed. Just pack Mitch White's bags for him, please. For the love of God. Like, are we really going to continue to go down this path? But, boys, I don't know. Yeah, I'm interested to see how this goes.
I think that's more of a niche topic, more like a course of season. But I think overall, our general consensus is going through all these signings independently and dissecting them. Basically, our overarching opinion is that offseason, no doubt, a disappointment. Yeah, coming into the offseason, I personally didn't expect a whole lot going, given the constraints of the actual market. You know, you didn't have the greatest free agent class for the guys that the Blue Jays needed, which was power bats, especially once it's from the right side. And in terms of the overall ability to make a trade, a splash, in the end, like the Blue Jays farm system, it's ranked near the bottom. It's in the bottom third by just about every major prospect evaluation system. So it really did seem like it was Ohtani or bust, and the bust ended up being just a cheap version of basically putting holes, like patching up some minor holes, even major holes. And ultimately, I view this offseason as just a get-out-of-jail-free card. If things go wrong, which obviously we won, opening day, everything's good, but if things were to go wrong, this won't be a 2018-like scenario where they have to basically pay to get rid of Russell Martin's contract, pay 2 years of Troy Tulowitzki to not play for them, and then obviously pay to get Kendrys Morales' contract. That was a disaster. Yeah. Yep. Fortunately, they did have the prospect capital at that time to overcome it. This season, though, if things were to go awry, at least to give them a head start, which unfortunately for the fans, they'll roll their eyes. They don't want to hear that. They want to build a contender right away. I do think that in terms of the way business and baseball is done, I think that's a decent approach, considering the fact that, if we're being honest, this club really hasn't given ownership a whole lot more reason to keep spending. You know, they haven't won a playoff game 3 years of the score. Mm-hmm. It's not sexy. I get it. As a fan, you don't like it. But from an objective standpoint, I don't completely blame them. Even with that all being said, Rodgers, like, the Blue Jays still have a high payroll this year. They're top 10 in payroll. Yeah. They're paying the luxury tax for the second straight year. So it's hard to really fault ownership all that much, in my opinion.
It's also kind of interesting how, and this is why it's a little worrisome as to where the future lies with this organization. Contracts aren't very guaranteed for these guys after the next couple seasons. Like, we know Bo and Vlad, and you know Bassett's up after next year. Kikuchi's up after this season. And it's pretty interesting how a lot of the free agents, they didn't want to go above a couple of years. Like, it's kind of worrisome for the future of the organization, but it just kind of shows you where they're at.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the biggest point of all, and I want to make sure it's hammered home.
Yeah.
Bo and Vlad still have next year with us. And that's guaranteed.
Runner contract next year.
And all those guys that we didn't sign this year, Chapman, Belly, Snell, all of those guys got opt-outs after year one. If they perform this year and they opt out of their contract in hopes of getting a bigger deal, they're available again next year, next offseason. What Rob said, I think, is the overarching point here. If the Jays perform with the guys that they got this year, get a playoff win, for God's sake. Then next year, the free agent market projects to be significantly better, and that's another year, in your final year with Bo and Vlad, that you can go all in. And that will be the ending of this offseason talk, because we do want to get to...
You mentioned the guys that we have this year. I think we got a lot of talk about with those guys. A lot of expectations coming in.
Oh, yeah.
Right, we're going to get into finally this year. Of course, a reminder to everybody, This is the Blue Jays Center podcast presented by the Sick Podcast Network. I'm Cole Liston here with my guys, James Price and Rob Pentelemon. We are talking Blue Jays baseball, the first episode of the year. And of course, if you guys want to join us in this conversation off of just this podcast, you can join the Bunches link in our Blue Jays Center Instagram bio, because that is where we do a lot of our nitty-gritty talk. And I'm sure you fans will have some fun and get your own opinions heard
open
on there
forum
as well.
For you guys. Open forum for
open
you guys.
Open forum. Whatever, and it's a very user-friendly app. So anyways, this season, team predictions, gun to our heads. We're putting our opinions on the line, and we will come back to these at the end of the year, just so you guys know.
Great.
Who will be the best player in terms of WAR? Rob.
In terms of WAR, so basically WAR, wins above replacement, all-encompassing stat, basically measures, it's what's meant to measure the whole value as a player in a singular number, big formula, one number for everyone to understand. There's different, there's Fangraphs where there's Baseball Reference where, but ultimately the objective is to measure the overall value of a player. And this may be, it seems like a cop-out, but I'm going to go with Bo. You know, you look at a guy playing a premium position, a guy who consistently is a very good hitter, a 125 to 130 OPS plus guy, seemingly rolling out of bed and can hit 300, can lead the league in hits. Did it for 2 years, would have done it last year had he not gotten hurt. And you look at his season last year, and basically just about every season of his career, if he can kind of be what he's been, that 125 to 130 OPS plus guy, and then take a, not even a big step, just a slightly, be a slightly above average defender. He went from a below average defender to last year, graded around about average. Can he be slightly above average? He's kind of been a five, close to a six win player every season. He's been healthy and played good defense. And aside from 2022, which he struggled for the most part of the year, which looks like an outlier now, I think Bo Bichette, if he's just who he is, I think I'm confident in him being a 5 to 6 win player this year. And I think that's going to be hard to beat. So I'm going to go with Bo.
I think Bo Bichette's the right answer for everybody. But that show, or this show, isn't just going to be about the right answer. I personally think, and I want to be specific so that everybody's aware at the end of the year, we're going Fangraphs for. And for everybody, we're not going to get into the differences between the two. You can do it on your own time if you're interested. Fangraphs WAR does seem to be the more respected WAR. So that's the one we're going with. And because of that, Fangraphs really loves my guy, Kevin Gausman. I think that, you know, despite him coming into the season, maybe off of two abbreviated starts is what it sounds like, if not maybe just one at the end of this week, early next week, I still think that he might have one of the biggest chips on his shoulder from last year, because despite him being our best pitcher last year, he knows he's been in an environment where he still hasn't gotten over the hump to get that win. And I think that he's getting towards the end of his career. I think that he knows that he is our solid ace going into the year. And I think that because of that, no one's going to compete harder than that guy. And I don't have any reason to doubt the guy that we saw last year, who should have gotten you know, more respect, I think, internationally than what he did. Because I think that you look at all the power rankings this year across the board, he's not even in the top 10 for pitchers. And I'm like, you didn't watch baseball last year then. You didn't watch the Jays. You didn't watch Kevin Gausman go to the mound every day and do what he did. And I think that the Jays' run support obviously didn't help him either. So I think that Kevin Gausman and that splitter and one of the best pitchers in baseball is going to be our best player this year.
Yeah, both of you guys put up great points, but I'm going to go after Rob's guy. Dalton Varsho, boy. Dalton Varsho. Rob just left as I said Dalton Varsho. We turned his camera off. One of the two.
Weird.
But regardless...
Where's the plug in there? Yeah.
So what's weird between Fangraphs and Baseball Reference, they both had him in a 4.8 WAR in his last year with Arizona in 2022. But last year, it was so skewed, as in 2.2 WAR on Fangraphs, 4.9 on Baseball Reference.
No, 3.9.
3.9? Yeah. 3.9. Regardless. Okay, yeah. I don't know why I said 4.9.
Still wide. Still wide.
3.9. That's a massive difference. So whoever you want to go off of, that's fine. We all know Dalton Varsho last year was one of the best defensive players in baseball. Not sure why he didn't have a Gold Glove. But regardless, we're not going to get into that debate. Offensively, couldn't get much worse. I mean, last year was a putrid offensive season. An OPS plus of 85. And again, his 2 years prior to that were, let me see if I can get it right here. His WRC plus even, let's go off of that, was 85 last season. 107 and 100 his last 2 years with Arizona. Significantly better.
Yeah. And we will say this, to tie it back to the guys that we didn't want to sign in the offseason, Dalton Varsho did have a harder hit percentage than Cody Bellinger, guys, just so everyone's aware. The percentiles led in favor of Dalton Varsho over Cody Bellinger, so we got our guy.
Yeah, Cole, you also did mention it was a 10th percentile hard
for Cody Bellinger. I know, it's brutal, awful.
Dude is the definition of a fraud, okay?
He might be a fraud. He's a fraud.
Yeah, that's it. All right, back to Rob's guy, Dalton Varsho. You know, offensively, 85 was the WRC plus. And by the way, IKF was significantly worse than that. But anyway, I digress. Dalton Varsho, we all hear throughout the offseason, you've heard it through spring training, if you care about it, whatever, that last season, and we all knew the expectations were through the roof. What he got traded for, nothing to do with him. But the expectations were off the charts. He felt it and offensively struggled. Now, I think he can get back to those Arizona numbers. You had the elite defense that he put up in left field and in center field last year when he was there to a, you know, let's put in perspective, the 107 or 100 WRC plus of his, you know, his previous 2 years in Arizona. He could be that, you know, five-win player type of guy. And
I think that's a good plug there. This is going to be your Dalton Varsho point is going to come out in the advanced analytics segment at the end of the show. I think it's going to fit in perfectly. Hand in glove.
Absolutely. But no, that's really it for me. I think Dalton Varsho's got it this year. I think his approach to the plate is going to be great. And I'd love to see him walk more, like be more patient at the plate. Those high fastballs that just ate him up last season. He walked and scored a run yesterday. So it helps my point a little bit. But yeah, I think that's my guy, Dalton Varsho, for the season.
Okay, I like that. Obviously, we could do best pitcher. I think that we all agree that it's Kevin Gausman, so I think we can just skip right on past that. Biggest bounce back, because that is what the Jays front office relies on this year. They wanted internal improvement, and they made that very clear by doing what they did in the offseason, but also just publicly saying it. So now it's up to us to decide who is going to have that biggest bounce back. The obvious answer is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I don't think I need to explain myself there, but we have some other options as well that could do just that. James, I'm going back to you.
Yeah, my guy is Alejandro Kirk. I'm going to go Kirky because for multiple reasons. Number one, at least to start the season, and we know it's horrible to say, but it's probably going to happen again. Danny Jansen's probably going to hit the IL at some point again this season.
Right.
He'll come back. He'll get hit in the hand again or something's going to happen with him. And Kirky's your guy. You're not going to have Tyler Heineman back there this year, even though you didn't want him last year. You got Brian Servin right now. It's like, who? So Rob didn't even remember his first name going into today. It is what it is. Now, we know Alejandro Kirk has an incredible bat-to-ball skills. And you saw yesterday, in a big moment, bases loaded. What did we hear about Kirk coming up through the minor leagues? Dude rips line drives, right? And last season, obviously, as did everybody on this roster, they struggled offensively. And throughout the spring, Kirk had three bombs in the spring. Again, it's spring training. I understand that. But, you know, it's something to keep an eye on. And his first big at-bat of the season, he rips a two-run single in the center field on a line drive. So I just think he's going to be the biggest bounce back this season. His numbers last year were pretty rough. You know, what was his OPS? It was under 700 or maybe just a shade.
The majority of the year,
Yeah, it wasn't great.
I think that your overall point is that he might be forced into being the biggest bounce back candidate.
He has to be. If this team wants to make the playoffs, he has to take that step.
Right. That position at the end of our lineup needs to be driving in runs. And if yesterday is any indication or if his rookie year is any indication, he has it in him. So hopefully that is what happens. Now for our over-under segment, also very quick, but the biggest over-unders that we need to focus on are wins, of course. That over-under has been talked about ad nauseum in this offseason. It's 86.5, and I think that, to be honest with you, it's a good line. As the better that I am, I think that it is a good line. And James, as we see James or Rob's having some technical difficulties, I'll start with you. 86.5. I'm going over.
I'm sitting there with you. Sitting there with you. You have one of the best pitching staffs in baseball. Like, regardless, like we saw last year.
It'll always keep you in a game.
Sure, it all absolutely will. And you saw how putrid that offense was last year. and they won 89. And I understand, sure, you lost Matt Chapman. And I don't know, I'm kind of blanking on other names we lost. But regardless,
Sure.
And Justin Turner's probably going to fit that fold quite nicely in the middle of the lineup. And as Rob mentioned, the numbers with him in front of the scoring position last year weren't great. And that's what Justin Turner excels in. So the offense should, in hindsight, be better. And your pitching staff hasn't changed. They are who they are, and they're one of the best in baseball, and they kept you in games last year, and your offense wasn't great, and you won 89.
Right, so, and that's without Alek Manoah. That's without him doing anything.
It's without Alek Manoah, and it's also without 90% of Matt Chapman. I understand the April numbers.
It is. It completely is. That was Matt Chapman's worst offensive year. He put up a 4 WAR on Baseball Reference. People wanted to hang him on a stick. Like, I think that the Matt Chapman loss could be the biggest effect that we have, but that's exactly true. It was without 90% of Matt Chapman.
Yeah, and you were able to find a way to win 89 games. So 86.5, yeah, I'm slapping the over on that.
Right, I agree. Rob, you good?
Yep, all good here. Sorry about that, guys. I'm back in here. It seems to be all good now. So all
right, 86.5 wins.
86.5, the over-under, right? That was the question?
Yes, sir.
You look at the law of averages. A law of averages is basically saying you start low, you're bound for positive progression. The last two seasons, we've all agreed the Toronto Blue Jays performed below expectations.
Yes. So
basically, by law of averages, wouldn't that mean that the third time around, you got to bet on a positive regression? No? Positive progression, right? So, I think that's that's good in theory, but I think this seems good. I think that they'll have a bounce back here offensively. I still trust this pitching staff. We can mention, will the regression through the pitching staff will the offensive improvement outweigh any regression in the pitching staff? That's a debate we've heard all offseason long. But generally, no, I feel pretty confident. I think that you look at the careers of these guys, I think that the pitching performance last year was not so egregiously above their career norms.
Well, that's what I was going to say. To answer the question, if there is offensive progression, and even if there is pitching regression, the answer is yes to the question. The answer is yes, it will outweigh, because by the laws of averages, the offensive impact of players is larger than what a pitcher can put up in WAR. So it's like that means that if everybody does improve offensively, that despite even maybe a slight regression on the defensive side, it won't matter.
Yeah,
exactly. And I think that you look at the way that this team performed the last couple seasons. I mean, they very, very much didn't live up to expectations. But now I think this is the year where finally it happens. I like the way the lineup looks. I think I buy into the new approach. I buy into the squad. I think that they got a lot of good things. Anytime you see a team not perform to expectations, they typically don't get a fair shake in terms of the next season's expectations. Yeah. I think just plain and simply, this is a good team who underperformed last season. And I think that to be so down on them, which is like a 3-win deficit, I'd bet against it. I'm betting on this team. I think they're going to go over. And I know that this is not the question, but I think they get in. I think they make the postseason. Yeah.
Not to mention, they're not quite at the point of playing with house money, because they still have expectations from Toronto media. And we are, of course, one of the most ruthless in sports. But despite that, the rest of the world doesn't really have a whole lot of expectations for them. And I think that you've seen Bo mention that quite often in this offseason. So I think that means that, at least internally in that dugout, they seem like they're playing with host money, which always seems to tend to lead to good things. We can talk about whether or not that's going to be enough for the playoffs. I think we should save that for another show. Mm-hmm. So let's go into the other big over-under that we did want to mention. Vladdy, 33.5 home runs. Obviously, James alluded to it earlier in the show. That only has happened once. And then if that doesn't happen this year, then maybe the playoffs aren't something that we're looking at. I lean the under, but I still think, as I said earlier, he will have the biggest bounce back year. And because of that, I think that he can be a 30 home run guy, a 32 home run guy, but a 900 OPS guy, which he wasn't in his 2022 season. He had 32 home runs, but he was like an 820 OPS guy. I think that 30 home runs, 900 OPS is a very good version of Vlad and a very good player, and especially when it comes to bounce back performances. So I'm going to go under, but not because I think he's going to have a down year per se. Rob.
So you mentioned the season that he had last year, not last year, the year before, which was his 32 home run season. You mentioned 820 OPS plus. It's very important to recognize, though, 130 OPS plus. That was a year where, for the first portion of the year, the offensive environment across Major League Baseball was just down. So you look at the numbers.
Yeah,
we hear the term inflation. It was kind of a deflation, whereas you had an 820 OPS, but a 130 something OPS plus. So relative to the league standards, Vlad was still a really, really good hitter, you know? And I think that last season was just such a disappointment that we forget that. You know, after that 2022 season, we looked at it as a bit of a disappointment because of the raw numbers. I think it was a much better season than it got credit for at the time. And to me, I think that's a realistic expectation for Vlad. I think 2021, just the numbers being so ridiculous, I think even all the projections – to expect that again, I think that's a little bit unrealistic. I think that's, even for most Hall of Famers, a once-in-a-lifetime, once-in-a-career season. Yeah. I don't think that it's unreasonable to suggest 2022 but better is a realistic expectation for Vlad. And I think that's the kind of expectation I had. I don't think that's a 90th percentile outcome. I think if he's a 140 OPS plus guy, which would be a decline from the 2021 season, but much better relative to all his other seasons. I think that's a realistic expectation. And I think to have a 140 OPS plus, I'm going to go the over. I'm going to go the over on that one. Even last year, he had 26 home runs, I believe. A lot of them, a lot of home runs that should have been home runs, that weren't home runs. So even with last season being as bad as it was, he probably should have cracked 30 plus. So hitting a few more, I mean, I don't think that's a tall ask. I'm hammering the over personally.
So I am slapping the crap out of the over as well.
Okay.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Well, I mean, if anybody doesn't know this, we did bold predictions on Blue Jays Center as well. James's bold prediction was 50 bombs.
Why not, fellas? Just fire it out there. My thought about that is multiple reasons. One, Rob, you mentioned a couple things. You mentioned one about the ones that should leave ballparks that didn't. Yeah. Second of all, talked about earlier in the show how the protection with Bo behind him, you know, he can't really pitch around. He's only got a lot more pitches to hit. And, oh, my God, I lost my other point. But you know what? Regardless, I just think with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Oh, yeah, by the way, this was the last point. He didn't hit a home run at home until June last season.
Yeah.
And he almost hit 30 bombs.
Yeah.
June! That's insane!
Yeah.
And that's, like you said, positive regression. It's probably not going to happen again this season. He hit a home run in his first game. And again, that doesn't really skew my numbers at all, hitting him in the first. I didn't care. I mean, I had made 50 bombs in the offseason, right? So I think it's the over just because of how weird last season was for multiple reasons. You add Bo Pittman behind him. I just think it's going to do nothing but good for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. So I'm going to go in the over big time.
Okay. Now for the hardcore section, something that, you know, I think will become – hopefully a fan favorite throughout the year. Definitely one of our favorites. Advanced analysis for all those people that enjoy it. And Rob, I'm going to start with you. You alluded to it earlier in the show. Ballpark factor. The Rogers Center has historically been at least up in the upper echelon of hitter friendly ballparks. Last year, it couldn't have been much worse. Bottom five across all of baseball. Obviously, with the new renovations, we were told by Keegan Mathison in the report that he did, seven more home runs would have went out in 2022 compared to 2023 with the new renovations. Did not happen. It did not. His report didn't equal what the actual results were. Go ahead.
I think that this is a topic that's come up many times throughout last season, throughout the offseason. I don't think people understand just how much this is a story, in my opinion. You mentioned, Professor, Rogers Center, 25th in the league in ballpark factor, meaning Rogers Center last year was prime Petco Park.
Right.
Like that's basically how it was. It was that much of an unfriendly hitter environment, completely away from expectations, diverging from the expectations. We mentioned, we thought it was going to be a homer-friendly ballpark. Mm-hmm. I remember we were there on opening day last season when the Blue Jays did five home runs, which, I mean, never happened again.
It felt like a sandbox.
It felt like we're here at Dunedin 2.0. It felt like we're sailing 2.0. Yeah. And it just wasn't that case at all last season. And I think so many guys, let me ask you guys a question. And it's not no trick question. Who are the two guys that had the most disappointing offensive seasons in your opinion last year? Well, who are the two guys?
Vladdy and Marshall, probably.
There you go. Yeah, Vladdy and Varsho. You look at their numbers, their road splits on the season, they were basically what we expected them. Vlad's numbers on the road last season, 137 OPS plus. That's the kind of season that we're hoping for him to have. Dalton Varsho, 109 OPS
plus. Wow. The wow.
These are two guys who, had they just had the same seasons at home that they did on the road, this would be no conversation.
Would have no well exceeded expectations.
Big time.
Well exceeded expectations. Wow. Can you imagine if Dalton Varsho is a 110 OPS plus guy with that defense? I mean, forget about Gabby Moreno. The trade's done. It's conceded. It's over. And another point for Varsho, I promised earlier James's point. Dalton Varsho had a 211 BABIP at Rogers Center last year. For context, league average is 297. So, I mean, a part of that is, you know, he did hit a lot of pop-ups, which typically don't turn into hits. But it's, like, almost criminally unlucky he was last season. And obviously, 55 OPS plus at home, which is obviously dreadful. 55. It's like, yeah, it's not major league caliber, frankly. Even with that, I think he's due for some positive regression as well. Not to mention the new change in approach. Yeah. Obviously, Vlad had an OPS plus in the 90s at home last season, which for him, that's just like it's almost hard to do for a guy that talented. Yeah. And basically, my main overarching point is that who knows what Rogers Center is going to be this year? Because last season, it was just a complete disaster. I think that over a larger sample, like the Keegan report you mentioned, Cole, it's going to normalize. A ballpark that's expected to be hitter-friendly should normalize. It was anything but hitter-friendly last year. And the two guys who disappointed the most offensively last year, in reality, they were actually not that bad. They were just really bad at home for whatever reason. So, and it sucks because we're baseball people. We're objective. We want to come up with a solution. I'm not sure what exactly that is. I'm not sure what exactly is going to happen this season. And I think that's such a major variable that no one is discussing. The Blue Jays as a whole team last year were top 10 in just about every offensive category on the road. I really think that this is a major variable that we have to keep monitoring. And that's what led to the disappointment of last year for guys specifically, but for the offense as a whole.
Completely agree. And I have kind of like 2 points that kind of tie into each other. I had a World Series tidbit that I put into our Blue Jays Center chat. And throughout the year, these kind of tidbits were also going to bunches. And my second advanced analysis is actually from a guy in the Bunches chat, a fan in the Bunches chat. I forget the name off the top of my head. But by all means, that will be happening throughout the year. If you guys have a good point in Bunches or, you know, in one of our shows, we might even bring you on to this podcast. So definitely join us on those two platforms throughout the year. World Series teams, both World Series teams, in the last 5 years, not including 2020, because that season shouldn't count on anybody's books. I went until 2018 because 2018 was the first time where it didn't happen. And like I said, I didn't check 2020. So 2018 was the first time it didn't happen. And that was when the Dodgers were one spot out of my criteria. So even then, I bet you if I just extended a couple spots, I could have went back even further than that. But let's just go until from 2023 to 2019, not including 2020. Both World Series teams were either A, top five in hard hit percentage, no surprise there for everybody who is into the advanced analytics, or top five in least amount of strikeouts as a team. If you were one of those two things, you were in the World Series. Or, you know what I mean? Those two teams were in the World Series, and they fit into those two criterias. And like I said, the Dodgers were one spot out on those criterias. I think they were one spot out in the hard hit percentage in 2018. But regardless, if you're one of those two things, you should be successful. The Jays in 2021, which is why we've always brought this point, 2021 could not have been a more disappointing season just in terms of luck. We had the best offensive team in baseball that year. Hard hit percentage led the league. And if I remember correctly, I'm pretty sure that percentage was amongst one of the league leaders in that sample size that I'm talking about. They would have been one of the best teams in those years that I'm talking about. So for that team to get 91 wins, I think it was, and miss the playoffs on the last day of the season was absolutely horrendous. Like, it could not have been more unlucky. An unreal year in the AL East and an unreal year for the rest of the middling of the pack in terms of the AL, in terms of wild cards. So that sucked that we didn't get that team in the World Series or into the playoffs.
That was the last year of the traditional five wild card, playoff team in the AL. So like, they would have made that playoffs had it been the same format right now.
Right. Cool. So it sucks that that team didn't get in because that was the best team to watch in this core so far. So that's my first tidbit. My second tidbit is the bunches tidbit, which is someone asked, someone brought up that they wanted to look into pull percentage, and they said that usually, you know, good teams are teams that pull the ball, as we've seen with Danny Jansen, that that's his whole approach, and it has worked out pretty well for him when he's healthy. People are right. If you are top five in pull percentage as a team, that usually accounts for being a good offensive team. The yep. Jays have kind of been middling right around mid-30s to low-30s in the last couple of years. 2021, obviously, they were at 38%, I believe, in pull percentage, and obviously that was their best offensive year. So if this team can get back to just that, if they can get back to the high-30s or even the 40s, if they get to 40s, then I think we're going to be looking at a really good offensive team. But if they can get to high-30s, it'll be a significant upgrade from last year, where I believe, if I remember correctly, they were 32%, I think is right around where they were. So you're looking at the mid-30s at least for this year for this team. And if the quote, "we need to do damage," means anything, and if yesterday means anything, it looks like that'll be more of the case this year. So hopefully that's the case. So that's the advanced analysis. And now we're going to, you know, wrap up the show kind of quickly here. We've mentioned some injuries throughout the show, just so everybody's clear. Gausman obviously didn't start yesterday because he's injured, but apparently is okay with having his abbreviated start happen in the majors rather than the reports that were coming out a week ago where he wanted two starts of 75-plus pitches in the minors first. He should be back at the end of this week, early next week. Swanson and Romano, those are two big ones that we need to talk about. Those guys are out until, I think, mid-April.
At least from what I heard. First of all, the IL, it's backdated 3 days into the spring training games. You can only backdate maximum 3 days. So that means that they must be on the IL at least 12 days, which would extend until the first homestand. So they're not going to be, for sure, no matter what. Like, even if miraculously they wake up tomorrow and right. feel good, they're not going to be back until at least the first homestand. And even then, all the reports suggest that it could linger on a little bit more. I think Arden's dwelling on our boy Bunkus's podcast, JD Bunkus' podcast. He mentioned that he thinks it's going to be 2 weeks at the earliest. Like, best case scenario, it's 2 weeks from opening day. So as far as I'm concerned, it looks like mid-April might be a little bit optimistic, which all of a sudden you look at the bullpen depth chart and what projected as a very good Blue Jays bullpen, but was last year, all of a sudden it's starting to look a little thin.
Yeah, and you're making all your depth guys too, so it's very important. Yeah.
We said it yesterday in the chat, like, without Swanson and Romano, that meant Wes Parsons. That meant Trevor Richards. Right. That meant Mitch White. That meant those Nate guys. So Nate Pearson, who has been a roller coaster his entire career. So without those two guys, this bullpen is going to need to step up huge for this homestand or for this road trip, especially considering the road trip that is ahead of us. It's been well documented. I don't think I need to get into it necessarily with you guys because, like I said, it's been well documented. You can just check the score app and you'll be like, oh, yeah, gotcha. The other two injuries that we have to talk about. Manoa is a little bit of both. It's a little bit of, yes, he is dealing with an injury. By all means, guys,
I want to be its own segment with the way that situation is playing.
Yeah, Manoa, we will talk about. I wanted to save Manoa since this is a large show. I'm going to save Manoa for another episode because he is his own conversation. And I assume that, you know, as these shows go on, he'll become more relevant of a topic to talk about. So I'm going to save Manoa. He's injured. He isn't just starting a AAA because the Jays don't trust him. He is injured. Jansen is the big one. Obviously, he's done, and also at least until mid-April. And if that bat isn't in our lineup, just maybe, unless James's intuition is correct with Alejandro Kirk, and he does have a big bounce back here, and maybe it won't matter as much. But if Kirk is kind of in the middle of what he has been so far in his career, then missing that bat in the lineup will be huge for this day season. But again, expected mid-April. Hopefully, that's what happens. Now, what will be a segment on every show and maybe even more in depth on most shows, previewing the show, the games that are going to happen until our next show, which will be twice a week for what we're trying to do this year. Friday, today, tonight, they're going against Aaron Civale. In my opinion, another subpar pitcher. Hopefully Jays can beat up on him. Chris Bassitt, despite what you might think, actually doesn't have a lot of experience against the Rays lineup, which is kind of surprising as he's, you know, pitched in the AL for his entire career. I thought that he would have more experience against these guys, but a lot of this Rays lineup is kind of new, which is probably what correlated to it. The best hitter against him, Randy Arozarena, probably no surprise, unless you look at his splits. He's not good against lefties, or he's not as good against lefties in his entire career, and he's not good on the road either. And that is worrisome. But for the rest of the lineup, he's been good against them. The small sample size that he does have with three guys getting six or plus plate appearances, he's been good outside of Randy. So I think that, you know, this could go two ways. Either it goes really bad because his splits are bad on the road, or it goes really well because this lineup just isn't that good against Chris Bassitt in particularly.
We also remember last season, Chris Bassitt's first start of the season in St. Louis was...
Yeah. And by all means, that skews the road numbers. But sure. Since 2022, his road numbers have been like double as bad as his home numbers. So
I'm also not so high on their offense.
Chris Bassitt, essentially, we talked about the segment how the Blue Jays... Didn't love the home cooking so much. Chris Bassitt was the complete opposite. Loved the home cooking. Didn't love going on the road.
Yeah, I hate doing this because it's the Rays. And Cole, you're with me in this. I hate their guts. Oh. I hate their guts and everything to do with Tampa Bay. We all know they somehow find this voodoo crap where they grab a scrap heap from another team and they make him into a Cy Young candidate. It happens all the time. But with how painful their rotation is, and I'm not so high on their offense. Like, if you look at their offense, other than them being the Rays, who scares you? Other than Yandy Diaz, Randy Arozarena. You could throw,
Paredes.
Sure. Brandon Lau, maybe a little bit.
Now that he's healthy, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Watching them yesterday run out Palacios and not Josh, you know, as they're opening the lineup, they had
Jose Siri, which by the way, Jose Siri, perfect Tampa Bay Ray, just like a pesky guy who just puts the ball in play and just steals bases and just is a mess.
A guy who was irrelevant when he came over initially. Dude had like 26 bombs last year, 25, 6, like second on the Jays in home runs. Like, what are we doing? And they were playing Caballero and they had Rene Pinto behind the dish. That's their starting. I don't. And yeah, Cole, you mentioned Aaron Civale. Yeah, no thanks. So
no, yeah, like last year, just to put it in perspective, he was injured, and he only played 45 innings for the Tampa Bay Rays. His ERA plus 78. Terrible in the small sample he was with the Rays. But then you go the year before in Cleveland, his last year in Cleveland. He played in Cleveland and in Tampa last year. That's where he got traded. In total, pitched 122 innings. His ERA plus, my mistake, was actually 121 for the entire year, but a large part of that was in Cleveland, whereas obviously he was awful in Tampa.
Raised pixie dust.
Yeah, he was awful in Tampa, but his career ERA plus is 108. So, you know, just slightly above average.
Yeah, he's not good, bottom line here. Okay.
His stuff is not good. In my opinion, his stuff is certainly not scary. He's a lot like Zach Eflin, so hopefully the Jays beat up on him.
Hey, don't freak out if the Jays go 0-9 to start the game with one time.
Hold serve. Just win one more game in this series, and we'll take it. We'll take it. Tread water, hold serve, just go 500 on the first initial brutal road trip. For the second straight year, we have a brutal road trip out of the gate. Guys hurt.
The road trip. The first bit of the schedule is brutal. Like you mentioned, the road trip, four against the Rays, three in the Strohs, three in the Bronx. You come home to Seattle for three. Then you have the pancakes of the Colorado Rockies, but then you get the Yankees again, the Padres.
The Padres are coming down this month.
Yeah.
Because we're not still in April yet, technically.
Right. I want to mention this though. Like, and I heard this on, I think it was Jay's talk. It's the AL East. Like, you're not going to start a year in the AL East with a soft schedule. It just won't happen. It will not happen. So this is going to be a reoccurring theme. The biggest difference between just starting a season in the AL East is that this one we're on the road for a lot of it. And obviously, finally, the pitching injuries caught up to us, at least to start the year. We were miraculously healthy last year. It's caught up to us at the beginning of the year this year. No A's and our best two bullpen arms on the IL. So, but the A's should be back soon.
No excuse. Like we mentioned, look at the Rays. Look at their injury list. I mean, at the end of the day, like you can't use the injury excuse in this series, at least.
Yeah, and despite it being in Tropicana Field, this Rays lineup, like Rob said, the Rays lineup isn't scary, and the Rays pitching staff right now certainly isn't scary. There's no reason that this offensive team, this lineup that we're putting out there, at least, shouldn't be able to be be competitive and come up with a series win.
Absolutely.
We'll say, though, you say that, not scary. The Rays are mummies, man. They're zombies. They'll come up from the dead and they'll figure it out. I'm still terrified of them. I don't care who's playing for them. They can have 25, 26 NPCs. I'll still pencil them in for 90-plus wins. That's just how it is. I mean, could you imagine if we had all these injuries in the starting rotation? We'd be like, is this the transition year? Is this where we pull the plug on this score? I mean, so
there's there's one thing that the Jays don't have and the Rays do, and that is a bucket full of pixie dust, pal. All right? We've seen it every year. You were talking about it last year with how the Mariners had the insane amount of pixie dust against these piss poor teams. The Jays didn't have anything, man. They ran out before the season started. Or they use it all on the pitching staff.
I don't know if they know where to go shopping for it. I don't know if they know where it is to go get it. No. Yeah.
Put it in Ross Atkins' Amazon shopping cart.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to wrap things up here, guys. As I mentioned throughout the show, Cole Whiston, James Price, Rob Pentelemon, you're watching the Blue Jay Center podcast presented by the Sick Podcast Network. Follow us on Instagram, especially at Blue Jay Center, biggest Blue Jays fan page on Instagram. Of course, subscribe to this podcast on all platforms. And join Bunches and follow us throughout the season. Have the conversations with us so you can have your opinions heard on this show. We want this show to be just like us, driven by the fans. So that's what we want for this year's show, or this year's podcast. And of course, we should be going twice a week. The next tentative date is Sunday night. So watch out for that on all platforms. Thank you guys for watching.
Go Jays.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow the Sick Podcast Blue Jay Center on YouTube, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts.